Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Let me very briefly introduce Susan Rasky, and then she will take it from there. Susan is known to many of you in this room. She's an alumni of Berkeley. She also holds a master's degree in economic history from the London School of Economics. She had a distinguished career in journalism, reporting for the Bureau of National Affairs and later for Reuters. She was also for a number of years the congressional correspondent for the New York Times. She won numerous awards during her journalism career, including the George Polk Award for National Reporting. Since 1991, she has been on the faculty of our journalism school, where she teaches, among other things, political reporting. So she's an ideal person to lead this discussion. Susan.
Hello. I am really grateful to Ethan for giving me such good material here. My biggest problem and your enjoyment will be that I won't get a word in edgewise between these two. I will try and unfortunately, they won't fight. I think this is the biggest problem. I will see if I can provoke them. I got a couple of things to tell you. You guys, please commit news. We have guests here from the Korean Broadcasting System who want to know what the heck is the matter with California. So all the way from Korea, please make news for them. And we have some very young journalists here from, I'm going to forget the name of your high school, guys, Monte Vista High School. And I expect you here front and center asking questions. You're the future of California. We need you. The rest of us have been hearing this discussion for about 30 years. All right, so in the spirit of committing news, guys, everything that has gone before you have heard. You have heard it for many, many years. You have at times preached it yourselves. I'd like you to please put on your political hats. This is not academic here. And let me start with you, Brulte. If I were going to do the most routine thing in the legislature, I was a citizen with a complaint, I was a citizen with a problem, I would not go to Lonnie Hancock, I would not go to the leader of the Senate or Assembly, assuming I could get there. I would probably hire your firm to help me get what I want. Maybe now I'd have to hire Naylor's firm because he's going to be helping out IGS, but...
Let me make some news. My firm is much better than Naylor's.
Or Merksamer's. Sorry, Steve. Give Steve credit, too. But my point is, I wouldn't even on a routine matter, let alone a complicated matter, bother going to the legislature anymore. Is that fair? Is that accurate? I mean, would
well,
you...
Well, one, I think it's horribly unfair. Having never served with Ms. Hancock, I can't address that component part about it. But let me just give you a real-life example. A woman came to me when I was in the Senate. She had something called the Garden of Angels. People used to abandon babies, generally within the first 72 hours of birth. They'd end up in dumpsters dead. And, you know, there was no one to claim them. She used to go to the sheriff's department and the coroner's department and take them and bury them. And she had this plot of land in a cemetery in my district. And she came to me and said, please put me out of business. And we began the process of looking into the whole issue of baby abandonment. I wrote a law that said that you can take a newborn within 72 hours of their birth, drop them off at any hospital in California, no questions asked, turn that baby over, and we will put that baby up for adoption. It became law. We've saved a couple hundred, 250, 300 babies. Probably the most important thing I've ever done in government, and it came because one citizen came into my office with an idea. So I don't buy into this, that you can't approach your legislator with good ideas. If you can't approach your legislator with an idea, you ought to get a new legislator. They work for you, not the other way around.
What if I had a complicated idea?
Complicated ideas are complicated, but you know what? If it's a good idea, smart people will work it through. I mean, a lot of time people come to me with ideas I don't happen to agree with. I mean, in one case, Cardinal Mahoney of Los Angeles. I mean, I'm not a Catholic. I'm a Baptist boy. He had some idea relative to some social welfare program. I didn't agree with it. But I sent him to a Catholic Republican named Dean Andall. Dean thought it was a great idea. Became law. I voted against it. And it's the law today. I don't even remember what it is. But, you know, look, legislators, I mean, there are some people who believe that being in government is part of the ruling class, and it's unfortunate that there are people who believe that. My general view of most of the people I served with, including this man, is that they have a heart for public service, they care passionately about their community, and they are very, very easily approachable.
One of the things, and I'll let you have back at this, but Mr. Treasurer, one of the things that we heard today is, just as it is true with Congress, that everybody loves and, in fact, fits perfectly with his or her own legislator, but that the consensus on the hard issues is no longer possible. There was some magic in the air when you guys were around, and that magic has gone. One of my favorite former staffers in Sacramento says that you used to be able to walk into a room of legislative leaders, if you were a staff expert on the budget, and say, "Hi, tell me what you want, and I will figure out how to give it to you," and that that is no longer possible, and it's not because of the budget numbers. It's because of an inability of leaders to coalesce. So.
Well, first of all, let me dispute the premise, because there's some polling data now that shows for the first time people think their own legislator is viewed unfavorably, not just the rest of them. So there's been a...
So there is a shift, you think?
Yeah, there's been an erosion of that sort of general rule, which we saw for a long time. If not all of the people that are involved in the very publicized stalemate issues, taxes, budget, and so on both sides of those debates are probably representing their constituents' point of view. And it reflects to a great extent the way in which we live in, we've sort of re-tribalized in communities that are Republican and Democrat mm-hmm. and so on. And so in that respect, they're doing their job. I think maybe if to the extent that there's that's been there for a long time, but to the extent that there is a change, Jim Brulte, who is so talented, it's impossible to describe all of the ways. But
and modest.
Mostly. yeah. And, but that too. And. But Bill Bagley, who's here, Bob Naylor, who's here, Paul Priolo, Monaghan, Maddie, Beverly, whose funeral is tomorrow. Anyhow, there was, I think, a different breed of Republican, not philosophically necessarily that changed, though something. Some of that, it was more a feeling, I think, that they're... job was to get something done. And when Jim and I worked on matters together, there was sort of a feeling, we got to figure out how to get things done. And that's been replaced by a much more less trusting, more perhaps less knowledgeable, more combative, and more ideological interaction. It's largely a function of term limits, I would say. It feels different to me. And, you know, it's common to say, well, you know, there's been this polarization and the Democrats have moved left and the Republicans have moved right. And maybe because I'm in one side of that, I haven't noticed the drift. But I think it's not so much philosophical, although there's some of that, as more as this sort of culture of trying to accomplish something that I find not being the primary motivation.
Jim, do you agree?
Well, I agree with part of it. Let me take a minute and try to explain. From 1932 to 1964, we had political parties that were not ideological. They were the haves versus the have-nots. There were basically two wings of both parties. My party, the Republican Party, had the Rockefeller wing, which was a more liberal wing, and the Goldwater wing. Taft originally had it more conservative. The Democratic Party, you know, had northern liberals, southern conservatives, southern Dixiecrats, racists. I mean, they didn't have a lot philosophically in common with northern liberals. And that's why we used to balance tickets. You know, back when I was a kid, you balanced tickets. Why did you balance tickets? Because there were two wings of both political parties. In 1964, parties started to align away from haves versus have-nots and along ideological lines. And that had started in 64. It's brought us to where we are today. You have two parties. The Republican Party is the conservative party. The Democratic Party is the liberal party. So there is a structural change in the parties. That's point number one. If you add to that, let's take California. When I ran for the assembly in 1990, 10% of the electorate were declined to state. About 50% were Democrat, a little shy of 40% were Republican. 10% were declined to state. That 10% today is 20%. Who are they? They're moderate Republicans that left the center-right party, and they're moderate Democrats that left the center-left party. And if you're a center-right party and you void moderates, you become a more right party. And if you're a center-left party and you void moderates, you become a left party. So today, legislators of both parties, I would argue, are more liberal or more conservative, depending upon their party, than their earlier counterparts. This gets exacerbated by three things. The first is term limits. If I said only Richard Nixon could go to China, most of you, except the Berkeley students here who may not know who Richard Nixon is, he's a former president, died a few years ago. But if I said only, that wasn't a shot at Berkeley, it has to do with age. If I said only Nixon could go to China, most of you would know what I meant. Here's a guy who for 20 years was a strong anti-communist. So when as president he announced that he was going to go to China, not Taiwan, but Red China, most conservatives said, just like my dad did, I don't understand this, I'm not sure I like it, but I trust Richard Nixon, and so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. You send people to the legislature, they're there for 4 years, they never have time to establish their credentials with their core constituencies to ever be able to tell their core constituencies no. One of the biggest problems with term limits is when Bill Lockyer and I were the leaders of our party, special interests needed us. That is not true today. Legislative leaders need the special interests. It's a horrible paradigm. It's also exacerbated by relatively safe seats. Now, most seats are going to be safe in California, no matter how you draw the lines, as long as you comply with federal law, because as Bill Lockyer has appropriately said, we've kind of tribalized by community. Interesting. My goal will be to get Jim Brulte quoted in your hometown newspaper saying that. I love it. In 1991, when the Supreme Court drew the lines, there were only 14 competitive assembly seats. That meant there were 66 safe assembly seats. Today, instead of 14, there are 8. Not much different. As long as you have safe seats, and as long as you have only the most liberal voters voting in Democrat primaries and only the most conservative voters voting in Republican primaries, you are going to continue to create and exacerbate this debating society that can't get together. It's not accidental that Gray Davis, an instinctively moderate Democrat, had trouble with the legislative wing of his party. Arnold Schwarzenegger, an instinctively moderate Republican, has trouble with the legislative wing of his party. 6 Republicans voted for tax increases. Two of them, their leaders, were removed from office. The other is going to be the subject of a recall. And another one was just the subject of a recall that didn't fail. But that's two-thirds of the Republicans that voted for tax increases faced punishment. And the reverse is true, too. You know, put up a bill that deals with organized labor in an unfair manner, and or some would say a fair manner. Watch how many Democrats who support it end up getting reelected. We have created a structure of dysfunction, and it won't change unless we make two or three changes. Sorry, that took more than a minute.
All right. I know you've been in favor for a while of longer, of lengthening term limits, but were you not there at the beginning in favor of what we've got now?
Well, I support term limits. I think they're a good idea. I campaigned for them in 1990, but at the time I said 6 years is not enough. I mean, now think about this. First of all, barring a political earthquake, Democrats are going to be the majority in the next election. Next November, some Democrat is going to be elected to the Assembly. He or she is going to be sworn in December. They're going to go through 2 days of training, Hertzberg Leonard University. It's basically how to be a legislator. They're going to go home for Christmas. They're going to come back in January. And in February, before he or she knows where the ATM is, next to the cafeteria in the basement to get some money to go see a movie, that legislator will be presiding over budget subcommittee hearings, deciding where billions of dollars of your tax money is being spent. And I will tell you, he or she isn't ready, no matter which party it is. And I don't care how many academics or radio talk show hosts says you ought to be able to figure out California in 2 years or 4 years. California is horribly complex, and doesn't matter how many degrees you are, how smart you are, it's hard to understand the complexity of the state. And I can only tell you in hindsight, having served as the Republican leader my 10th year in the legislature, I can tell you in hindsight, there's a whole bunch of things I didn't know when I was the Republican leader in the Assembly, when I was there in my third year.
A reaction, because, you know, Jim and I have had this interaction before, and, you know, it's a clever intellectual trap, I think. And I just have to give him credit for, you know, sort of the description of how the independents left the Democrats and Republicans and left them more liberal and more conservative. And, of course, principally the independents philosophically are very, very close to where the Democrats are today on most issues. But so you have to kind of wonder who went, who left and who didn't, but and why. I guess I start with sort of, the labels always concern me. I started being political when Adlai Stevenson, that's a name they definitely don't remember. But Adlai Stevenson, as governor and presidential candidate, used to say, you know, I'm much more aware of the things in the American tradition that I would conserve than I would change. And that's my view, too. It was a lot of years ago, but I'm still a First Amendment purist, and I was sitting in Sproul Hall as a free speech advocate a lot of years ago. Those are enduring conservative, I would say, values. But so I don't disagree with the analytics in terms of dependence on special interest groups, people being too inexperienced for very serious work that needs some apprenticeship and they don't have a chance to get it and some things. And I guess that's the more important thing to note our agreement on with respect to those matters.
All right. So this is the morphing of Jim Brulte into Lockyer and Lockyer into Jim Brulte. We're going to get to pensions in a moment.
It happened a long time ago.
I still want to know, when you guys were leaders, did you not take your caucus people into a room and say, you don't vote the way I need you to vote to settle this issue. I will run ads against you. I will do this against you. I will see that you don't get a dime from me. I mean, why?
You couldn't do that.
You could not do that.
You cannot do that. You cannot do that as a leader.
Well,
But you guys did. I mean,
well, look,
no, we didn't.
I was the minority leader. My general view is there are three ways you can motivate people in Sacramento. With the ability to reward and punish through sheer force of personality or a combination of the both. Mm-hmm. When you're in the minority, you generally just have to do it through force of personality. The majority leader tends to be able to do any of the three, but there are 120 legislators, most of whom get up every morning, look in the mirror, and think they can be governor. And you spend, I never did, but you know, I never wanted to be governor. And by the way, this man should be governor. If you, that's news. Koreans, news. And there are not enough Koreans in the state legislature either. But, you know, if you, I mean, you get to do that once, maybe twice, but at the end of the day, they'll hand you your head. You have to make compelling arguments as to why things are good public policy. Yeah. And from time to time, why things are good politics. And my general view is good policy is good politics.
I agree.
So if I somehow magically could put you back in charge of a caucus, could you make policy today? Could you make good policy? You could make a piece of good legislation like the one you gave me the example of, but could you policy on the big stuff?
I think so, although... you know, we've reached a very, very difficult period, and you know, Bill Lockyer was very good at saying I was full of crap. I mean, I thought that was a very polite way of saying it. I'm a pro-life, anti-tax, small government, pro-parental right, pro-local control Republican, and if I were in the state Senate today, I would be one of the liberal Republicans.
It's more attitude than philosophy. Temperament.
There is a different breed, and it's on both sides. The difference is the reason it's not as pronounced, I think, on the Democratic side is because they're in charge. They actually have to govern. And that does mitigate you a little bit. But I think the answer is yes, but given what I think is a historic rebasing down of revenue, you know, this isn't a blip. It's a historic rebasing down. It's not just California. It's the rest of the country. You know, when Bill Lockyer and Jim Brulte sat in a room together, we had three choices. We could do good, we could do better, or we could do best. And when the people in Sacramento get together today, they have to find the least worst. And so the challenges that they're facing are not significantly different, I think, than what we went through, but they seem to be in terms of magnitude greater. Because both political parties overspent and broke the bank, and both political parties would rather not solve the problem. I mean, Republicans don't want to raise taxes, so they will borrow billions of dollars and push the problem out into the future. Democrats don't want to cut, so they'll borrow billions of dollars and push the problem out to the future, although Republicans did vote for taxes last year and Democrats do vote for spending cuts. But, you know, they're not around long enough to have to live with what they decide. And that's a little bit of a problem.
Well, we're getting to the morphing part now. I want you to talk about what you've been saying lately, which is why he wants you to be governor, I think.
He
hasn't heard it yet. Well, we could start with spending caps. We could start with public employee pensions. You know, pick your Jim Brulte issue.
Well, I'm the banker, and so my job is to kind of admonish the folks that want to spend
And it's whether they're spending in the way of tax cuts for some business entities that they like or public programs for health care or whatever. My job is to admonish them to figure out how to do those various things in the context of balanced budgets. Sort of an old-fashioned idea, but the last time we had one of those sort of balanced budgets happened to be when I was pro tem and Jim was the minority leader in 1997. Last 12 years, we've not had a balanced budget in California. External borrowing, internal borrowing, gimmicks, and so on. And it just has to stop. It just has to stop it. And so, you know, I have my own view about what the proper mix of tax cuts should be, although one of the things I did do in testifying yesterday in the legislature was to say to the Democrats, look, two-thirds of the bills here, three-fourths, by the way, are introduced by Democrats, two-thirds of the bills are junk. Just stop the madness. And Democrats have to discipline their own members. Don't just rely on the opposite party to point out how stupid some of these things are. Do some of your own self-discipline. And I know you all believe that somehow the solution to all these problems is to have tax increases. Give it up. It's not going to happen. It maybe shouldn't happen, but it's not going to happen. So what Republicans bring to the discussion is at least a commitment and sometimes some special knowledge about how to run organizations efficiently. We need that. We need to figure out how to be more efficient with the resources we've got in the public sector. And so let's get together, do genuine and significant, serious oversight. When you do budget hearings, or you know, my recommendations are the new legislators ought to be required to sit down with the committee consultants that have been there hopefully for a while and talk about what's the policy development in that pond for a decade. They ought to, as a committee, talk about what are the two or three big things we're going to work on this year. They should, if they're doing budget work, go out and actually visit the Employment Development Department or whatever the heck it is that they're trying to write some abstract policy about, to be much more Aristotelian, get right in and talk to, not the director who's going to whine about their budget, but talk to the people that have worked there for a career about what goes on and what could be done better. So we have to redirect, I think, our energy in a very substantial way to do that kind of thing. And example, because of term limits and the things that Jim, I think, quite smartly talked about with the dependence on special interests, term limits have amplified enormously, not just systemic, but individual obligations to the people that fund you. And my example that I always give is I was first elected in 1973 to the State Assembly. I can tell you to this day, every major contribution for and against me. I can't tell you that for 1976 or 1984 or 1996. I don't know. I'd have to go look up the records. But I can tell you that one, and you remember those indelible first experiences, like lots of things, that last 6 years is too short a time. And you're too dependent on the next campaign you're going to have to run. When I... Once I was in the legislature, after a campaign, if I spent 1% of my time fundraising, I'd probably be exaggerating. As a leader, as the banker for the caucus, it was substantially more, but that was part of my job. Now it's a constant thing that's going on, and it needs to change. And so an example for Democrats is, in the current environment, they cannot fix the public pension and health system. And if it's not fixed, bankrupt was probably too strong a word. It's the one I used to get their attention. But it will cause enormous hardships on all public needs and potentially could bankrupt some local entities or the state. I don't think the Democrats are capable of fixing that. And unfortunately, the Republicans aren't capable of fixing it intelligently because it's all cant and anti-public employee sort of perspectives as their political enemies. So it's an example, I think, of where There's a great need and an inability to address it. Sorry, I went too long.
No. I'm happy to let you go. At the beginning of this conference, Jack Citrin showed us a bunch of statewide polling that suggested about the closest thing to a consensus there was in California was term limits. You guys, having been there, done that, are certainly in agreement on it. Is that, if you could wave a wand, if I could wave a wand, if any of these people could wave a wand, is that the systemic thing you would fix first? If you could, I mean.
It's one of a number. It's not the one I would do first.
What would you do first?
You know, I would put in place a spending limit of some sort.
Smiling again.
Well, no, I'm going to steal one of Bill Lockyer's lines.
I've told
Bill Lockyer said last time we were together that the founding fathers were brilliant because they crafted a system of government that even idiots could run. And that, you know, I'd never thought of it that way, and it really is smart. Look, when I got to Sacramento, I thought there were two political parties, the small government Republicans and the big government Democrats. And you know I was wrong. There are two parties. The big government Democrats are there, but they're not small government Republicans. They're smaller big government Republicans. I mean, we proudly beat the tar out of Governor Davis for breaking the bank. But the dirty little secret is the state budget, the 2000-2001 state budget that broke the bank and we are still trying to pay off the deficit for, passed with a majority of Republican support in the Assembly and a third of the Senate Republicans supporting it, notwithstanding my opposition to it. Everybody overspends when it's not their money. I used to work for a member of the legislature. He will remain nameless. He had his own private company. What he paid secretaries in his private company was significantly less than what he was willing to pay secretaries who worked for the state. Even though the job was the same, one was his money, the other was our money. Everybody overspends, and so you have to take human nature into account, and you have to find a way of restraining it. And so the first thing I would do would be to put in place a spending limit, and there are any number of limits that you could put in place that says you can't grow government beyond a certain point over a period of time. It allows certainty to the people who need it. It limits the ability of both political parties to overspend. That would be the first thing I did.
And government is the first thing you would attack in that? I mean, we keep hearing that per capita California ranks
bottom of spending
on its government.
Well, actually, that's not true, but we're not going to debate that. And, you know, I know there are at least two other Republicans in the audience that... So in this, even if I made a better case, you wouldn't believe me anyway. No, you have to do that because it's not fair to anybody. One, we have these massive fluctuations of income because of our current system. If we don't fix that, you have to find a way of not spending the huge upsides. And two, I mean, is it fair to a state employee to say, oh, hey, sorry, you know, we gave you a pay raise 3 years ago, but now we're going to send you home 3 days a month without pay. You're going to get a 14% pay cut because we can't figure out how to do our budgeting. I mean, it doesn't benefit anybody that we don't have certainty or we put enough money away for a rainy day.
All right, so spending cuts first.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
I didn't say that either. I said a spending limit. A cap suggests an ultimate top. A limit suggests a rational, methodical opportunity to spend more. And you have to have enough of a rainy day fund because nobody's been able to figure out how to repeal the business cycle. You're going to have good years and bad years. And when you have good years, my team wants to give it back and his team wants to spend it. And when you have bad years, my team doesn't want to raise taxes and his team doesn't want to cut. So that's human nature. You recognize it. So how do you get around it? You say, you know, you can spend no more than the 10-year rolling average increase in revenue. So when we get a 20% increase in revenue 1 year, you only get to spend 6% of it. That's rational. I would deal with term limits. I think there ought to be 12 years in either house. No, that's less than what you currently had. I have 14, only because it allows you to be there, and it also helps the mentoring process. One of the big problems with term limits is there are no mentors today. And you know, my Republican friends will not like to hear me say this, and this might even cost Bill a couple of votes. I learned a lot from Bill Lockyer. Not that he set out to be a mentor, but you know, Willie Brown was there, Bill Lockyer was there, Ken Matty was there. There were Ross Johnson were there. There were people that had been around a long time, and I could learn from what they did right, and some of them were honorable and honest enough to share what they did wrong. And that's a very, very important. I mean, you go through apprenticeships in business and in the trades because you want to do your job better. There's no longer apprenticeship. So I would fix term limits. I also think, I'm not an expert on the issue that's on the ballot in June, but as long as you have a continually smaller percentage of Republicans and a smaller percentage of Democrats in the state, and when you look at primary voters, which are the most partisan, as long as you continue to have declining participation in the primaries, you're going to continue to get right candidates and left candidates, and that doesn't help governing, because most Californians, I think, believe that the solutions are somewhere in the center.
Unlike the Republicans, our party lets the independents vote in the Democratic primary.
Yes, my party is the stupid party.
And it does. We hope.
But we just
do what you know.
We just beat down a resolution to prohibit independents from voting in our party primary.
All right. That was his wish list?
Well, it's not one I particularly disagree with. I mean, you'll find some, I think it's fine to have a... I really was amused by the difference between a limit and a cap. It was brilliant and probably right. But I like one of those things. It's okay. And the reason is the Teachers Association, as soon as they want to bust out of it, can with their initiative to spend more. So, okay, I would trade that one away. I wouldn't do it without a good swap. But
so what's the swap?
Well,
what's the deal?
It's probably some tax revenue of some sort, or some particular spending change. That if you look at the state budgets for, you know, the most typical cap advocated or limit by conservatives has been. The rate of inflation and population growth should be the number you can grow that. And okay, let's say we work with that one. If you look at the last decade, what you'll find is that K-14 schools have not kept up with that number. They're 0.2% below it. The university is just a smidge above it. This is not putting into these numbers all the last year budget things. Welfare has been cut 7.6% every year below that amount. Healthcare exceeds it, but still 3.5% or so, still substantially below healthcare account inflation in the private sector and nationally, because we have various caps. The two areas that have busted the cap are spending on prisons and tax cuts, the principal one being the car tax that was cut. I always am amused, Jim's heard this, that George Washington's tax program in 1791 was tax cars and tax sin, whiskey. We're still having that debate. But anyhow,
it was a carriage tax.
Some of you are scratching
your head. Yeah, you wondered if there was a car. It was a carriage tax. Anyhow. Thanks, Jim.
Well, this isn't Stanford, you know.
Yeah.
Oh. We're splitting off the Southern.
It's all right.
Well, you're right. At Stanford, they would be more familiar with carriages
that's
for rich
right,
people.
Right. The news will be that I got the crap beaten out of me on the way to my car.
No, so. But prisons and tax cuts, you know, that which the Republicans mostly advocate for the most is the things that have been busting the cap. And so one of the things I suggest to them is, hey, discipline your own spending, you guys. If that's what you believe, don't wait for the federal court to tell you to do it. Try to figure out how to have intelligent sentencing policies. Now, that's, I think, as a general matter, the way Jim has framed it, of a spending party and a spending but a less spending party is the correct way to understand these things generally. But certainly for volatility in revenues, capturing the extreme ups and banking it for the rainy day is a smart thing to do, and we ought to do that. Term limits, I would mention a lot of legislative work. Legislative work is different. You know, I guess the way I want to say it is this. What an extraordinary experiment. No big place on the planet in the history of our species has tried as fundamental principle to say everybody counts. What a glorious idea. And we're still figuring out what that means. And, you know, so Jim talked about the have and have not debates that define parties. I still personally think that's the heart of it. That the two principal issues for people in politics and others to think about are with whom and for what, and with whom may be primary and for what secondary and derivative. But that's still a very important concern and distinction between parties. Excuse me. But the other thing in this, what breaks my heart is here we have this noble experiment and people don't give a shit and don't participate. And I don't know what to do about it. It breaks my heart. They don't care. They don't listen. They're too busy. All of the stuff, you know, participation rates and so on. I don't know what to do about that. And it's going to be a failed experiment if we don't figure it out. The legislative work, and what's special about the legislature, it's the people's branch. All the other stuff is aristocratic. It's really the branch the people own and about which they are the most critical and least understanding. The great accommodations in a plural society, which is a greater need always because of the diversity in a state like ours, the accommodations get worked out there between the regions and philosophies and interests and so on. And it's a special kind of skill. It requires listening and working together and trusting each other in a way that's different than executive or judicial governing. And you need time to figure out those skills. We all go to Sacramento kind of with an attitude of, they've screwed things up and I'm going to fix it. And it takes a while to realize they get a lot of advocates. There's plenty of that around. They don't have many mediators, and we don't naturally seem to have mediative skills. And that's what leaders do if they're any good at it. And this guy was one of the best. And so you need time to develop that skill set. For me, I was 25 years in the legislature, and it was 21 before I became the leader. And I was, I think, getting better up to my last day and learning more all the time. And everyone is different. Some were dead on the first day they were there and the last day they were there and so on. Without name,
by the way, that's,
naming
that's
any
names.
That's a
bipartisan names. Thing.
Yeah, right. No names attached to that. So anyhow, so term limits, unfortunately, separate from all of these impacts on lobbying and fundraising and knowledge and experience and apprenticeship, it just doesn't give you the space to get to know each other and to figure out what you can do and look for the things you can work on jointly. It's too combative in an atmosphere. And the voters think it's a good idea. And unfortunately, it's probably not going to change in the near term. And it's tragic.
I'm sorry, you want...
Yeah.
Well, I just...
Are we doing questions?
Yeah, we are going to do questions, and we're going to start questions, but I want to ask you one thing. You scared me for a moment. I thought we were going to get to the one thing that hasn't been blamed for the problems in the state, and that is the media. I want to thank you for not blaming the media, but I am struck when you both talk about how much of your solutions are Sacramento-centric. Do you think some of the problem is that nobody has time to worry about Sacramento? You guys spend too much time in Sacramento and not enough time communicating with folks back home? Or doing dog and pony shows all over the state, or holding hearings all over the state, that kind of thing?
I don't think so. I mean, I happen to live in my district. I flew home every week. I spent a lot of time. My phone number was in the phone book. I interacted with real people in the community all the time, and it was actually interesting because Sacramento is a television market, and I was on television a lot in Sacramento. I was more well-known at this grocery store in Sacramento than I was in Rancho Cucamonga. And, you know, when people know you, that you get a different reaction. You hear things differently. So I don't think that's necessarily the problem. I think the problem is people get elected and they're thrown in and, you know, your lead. I mean, look, this is not a criticism of Fabian, and it's not a compliment. Shouldn't be taken as one of the other. Fabian Nunez was elected Speaker of the Assembly, 13 months after he got there? Look, I was a freshman elected leader of my party in both houses, and I can tell you, I mean, but for good luck, Pete Wilson, I mean, if I had to be the Republican leader standing up to Gray Davis as a freshman after 2 years, I wouldn't have been able to do it anywhere near as well as I think I did it, having been there 10 years. And so what you have today, I mean, I'll never forget this, the very first thing I learned from Bill Lockyer was I listened to him have a discussion about incrementalism. You know, I was this new kid, I wanted to change the world. And he talked about how he had been there a number of years, and slowly but surely, you can incrementally move to a goal if you just stay determined. I'll never forget that. And where we are today, you know, and term limits is just, it's the default. Too many people talk about it. It's one of a number of things that need to be changed. But you have very young people there, and they're being led by people who haven't been around long enough to see all of the problems or having been through this. I mean, look, is there anybody in this room that doesn't know that there's a business cycle? I mean, we have members of the legislature today who have never had money to spend because we've been in the tank since then. Let me give you three sets of numbers. Pete Wilson left office, the general fund was $57 billion. We had a 34% increase in 2 years under Gray, from 57 to 78. $21 billion growth on a $57 billion base. You had people there who spent it. You know, the budget this year is what, 85? Okay, 10 years later, from 78 to 85, and we still have a massive deficit.
Well, borrowing, by the way.
And that doesn't count off the book stuff. And it's not just the legislature, it's the executive. I said it to the Los Angeles Times. If Bill Lockyer had been governor in 1998 or 99, 2000, 2001, he would have never let the legislature do what they did and break the bank. But you have young people and old people who are relatively new to the political process. They react to the interest groups that help them get elected, and they spend money they don't have, they support programs that are not supportable, and we collectively are going to pay a huge price for that beyond what we've already paid, and it's not going to be fixed in the short term. And heaven help the next governor, whichever political party it is, because it's going to be even worse for them, because we're still not out of this.
The budget account suggests that the next 2 years, it's about a $38 billion deficit. So approximately $20 billion a year more has to be cut. out of the next two budgets. Understand that 75% of the state budget is transfers to local agencies. It's schools, cities, counties, special districts. It's not some state spending. So one of the things that always sort of annoys and amuses me is to hear my local mayor complain about how the legislature is, or governor is, raiding their accounts. And, well, if you got a huge problem with deficits, how do you immunize 75% of it that goes to local agencies and make up the billions? You could shut down everything else, prisons, universities, and still not get there. And it's unfortunate that everyone sees their piece of the pie and doesn't fully understand the way all the pieces fit together.
All right. It's your turn.
I heard a lot of references to the public opinion being divided and problems as if they originate with the electorate. There's been no discussion that I've heard about the campaign financing and the hiring of advertising agencies and interests to, in some ways, misinform or to make the public more divided on behalf of the interests of this particular public employee union or law enforcement or teachers. Is there anything that you would suggest that could make the campaign process less irrational and therefore perhaps make the public vote or allow the public to vote in a way that some might consider to be more rational?
Well, I don't think they were irrational when they elected Bill and they elected me. But campaign finance is a very interesting topic, and we could do hours on that. If I could wave a magic wand, I'd do two or three things. One, I'd say instant reporting. Whenever anybody gives a contribution, it needs to be reported on the internet within 24 hours. Now we require it at a certain level. We ought to do it, you know, at a much lower level. Two, I would say that, you know, I'm not a big believer in contribution limits. I think people have a right to give whatever they want. But in this state, we have contribution limits. If I want to run for governor, or Bill Lockyer wants to run for governor, it's what, 20, 28, 29? $25,500. First thing I'd say is if somebody who has plenty of money, like two of the Republicans running, Steve Poizner and Meg Whitman, full disclosure, I'm chairman of the Poizner campaign for governor. If a millionaire wants to run and spend their money against you, there ought to be no limits for you, because we're making it very difficult for middle-class people to run statewide in California because it's very, very expensive. Transparency is the most important thing, including transparency for groups that do issue ads, whether they're the Sierra Club or Big Oil. I mean, we've created this new kind of morph issue ad where if you don't mention a candidate's name, you don't have to disclose. And I think all of that is horrible. Let me tell you the one thing I'm absolutely sure about relative to campaigns and money. Money in campaigns are like ants at a picnic. It doesn't matter what you do to try to get rid of them, they're going to show up. And we started to try to fix campaigns because we didn't think Richard Nixon did the right thing in the 70s, and we created the FECA, the Federal Election Commission Act. We limited contributions there. The parties have figured out how to get around them. It doesn't matter what you put in place, people will figure out how to get around it. So if you automatically disclose, you should automatically disclose.
I would only add that I largely agree with the comments Jim made. I think of it not as, maybe because of my background, but not as ants at the picnic, but as gravity. And in our society, money is a fundamental principle, and it affects everything. I don't know how you can not expect it to affect public policy and politics. And so now the way people have gotten around all the independent the limits is to have independent expenditures, which you can't probably do anything about. The only solution I say this facetiously, but the only solution to money in politics I can see is this. We elect legislators for 8 years. They are banned from ever running from another office,
and you select them by lottery. And you have robust recall for the mistakes that came out of the lottery box that you wish you didn't get. I don't know any other way to not have money influence. Now, I'm not sure I want to do that. I'm not. But if you really want to do it, that's the only way I think you can.
Yeah. This independent expenditures that Bill talked about, let me tell you why I don't like them from a purely philosophical point of view. You know, as a leader, if they help my candidates, I'm for them. But let me just, if I'm running against Bill Lockyer and I have to put my name on an ad and I can be held to account for what I say about him and I get it wrong, the media generally beats me up. These independent expenditures, you don't know who they are. They can say whatever they want about Bill and I, and they don't care. And that's horrible. And that's a change that's not very good for not only democracy, but for the political debate.
All right. Thank you guys very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.